Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 344. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about tropical paradises, penal colonies, and really big crabs as we go to Lord Howe Island, Norfolk Island, and Christmas Island off the coast of Australia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have three news stories for you. In the first one, some strange things are being seen in airports these days. Airports are trying to differentiate themselves. The Munich airport has a brewery. The Hong Kong airport has a 9-hole golf course. JFK airport is doing concerts, and you can do a backstage tour of the Zurich airport. Speaking of odd things that you can see in airports, a company is inventing a suitcase that will follow you through the airport. It is self-propelled, and it homes in on the Bluetooth signal in your smartphone. I personally think this won't work because I've been through enough airports to know that they are chaotic, and I think people are not going to see your suitcase if it's not in your hand and will trip over it. But speaking of good ideas, JetBlue is doing a new marketing promotion called Election Protection. If you've been threatening to leave the country if your candidate doesn't win the U.S. presidential election, JetBlue has a contest for you. You tell them your candidate and which of the tropical countries they have selected that you would want to go to, and if your candidate loses, you just might win a trip out of the country. They do point out that for the best election protection, you should vote on November 6th. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Lee Abamonte. Lee is the youngest American ever to travel to every country in the world. We've brought him on to talk about a couple smaller destinations. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm really excited to be here.
And we'll talk more about where people can read about your travels, but I should also mention you're coming to us from leeabamonte.com. And if you don't know how to spell that, check out the show notes at Amateur Traveler. So what you pitched to me was Lord Howe Island off the coast of Australia, and we decided to include two other islands as well. Why would one go to these little tiny islands off Australia?
Well, Australia is one of the best places to go in the world, as most people listening to this probably know. And Lord Howe Island is often considered the most beautiful island in the world. It's definitely one of the best islands in the Pacific, and a lot of big travelers who have been to tons of countries, people like myself, consider it to be one of the most beautiful places in the world. Now, it's a smaller destination, so to fill the time on the show, we thought it would be a good idea to include a couple others. The other two that I'd mentioned were Norfolk Island and Christmas Island, both of which are also off the coast of Australia and also under the Australian flag, but operate separately as semi-independent states.
Challenge the first thing you said there, which is Australia's the best place to go, or one of the best places to go. What makes it for you one of the best places to go in the world?
I think Australia is one of the best places to go in the world because it has so much to offer. It has mountains and beaches. It has nice people. It has about 10% of the population of the United States, but has the same size. So it has a lot of diversity. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to see. You could keep yourself occupied for years. But then it also has all these amazing little islands off the coast. Everyone knows about the Great Barrier Reef and all those great islands and everything. But there's a lot of other islands on both coasts, in the Pacific Ocean and also in the Indian Ocean, that Australia has to offer. So that's what I would like to talk about, because I like to go to more remote destinations.
Excellent. And I'm going to challenge you on the mountains. They really have hills. They just call them mountains. But let's talk about Lord Howe Island. Beautiful island. not a very big island in between Australia and New Zealand. What stands out for you about Lord Howe?
Well, first of all, Lord Howe Island is World Heritage Site in and of itself, the whole island. It's one of four islands in the whole world, kind of like the Galapagos Islands, that are actually a World Heritage Site. There's only 400 people allowed on the island at any given time, and realistically, there's only about 150 people on the island at any given time. It's one of the most pristine and beautiful places I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of islands. It's actually self-governed, but it's technically a part of New South Wales, which is the same province that has Sydney in it. Mm-hmm. So it's just a great place to be. It's very difficult to get to. It's very exotic. There's only a couple flights a week from either Sydney, Brisbane, or a place called Port Macquarie, which is also where the supply ship comes from. And it has some of the best beaches in the world and definitely some of the best hiking in all of Australia, let alone on any island.
But I'm guessing it's not the beaches or the hiking that made it a World Heritage Site.
Well, they probably contributed to it a little bit, at least the beaches. There's the reef that surrounds it, so there's also some great diving and snorkeling. But what makes it a World Heritage Site, I think, is the actual natural beauty and then kind of the ecosphere that's around it with all the wildlife, both fish and also on land. I think there's actually 14 unique species on the island.
Okay. And this is a place that I was going to – I normally ask at this point what kind of itinerary you would recommend. But this is a small enough island. We're staying in one spot. So what are we going to do with our time on Lord Howe, and about how long does it take to experience the island?
The thing about Lord Howe Island is it's a small place, okay? We can't argue that. It's only a couple miles long by about half a mile to three quarters of a mile wide. However, there's actually a ton to do. I know that might sound crazy, but you can spend a week there easily. And during that week, you could do a ton of different things. There's several different hikes of varying lengths and varying difficulties. What you have to realize about the island is it's very mountainous. And on each side, it's flanked by large mountains, not hills, actual mountains, and including Mount Gower, which I believe is 875 meters and is takes 8 hours to get up and down. So that's a day right there. On the other side is Malabar Hill and Kim's Lookout, which can be a great hike, and you can stop and actually have picnics up there, and that's several hours as well. There's beaches on each end. You can actually take boats out to some neighboring atolls and do some diving and snorkeling out there. Additionally, a lot of people just ride bikes or walk. I mean, you can walk the whole island in a few hours, or you could just ride bikes. But what most people end up doing is walking. Now, there's a ton of restaurants also. I shouldn't say a ton. There's a few restaurants in town. And when I say town, there's a main street that has a post office, a few stores, a great restaurant called Humpty Mix. And it's kind of the heart of the island, if you will. Now, you can also go and do several different activities, mainly water-based activities around the island. They have a couple of different PADI certified diving shops, and you can also go on different boat rides around the island. And it's one of those places where every time you look at the island, it looks beautiful because it's in a different location. Now, granted, it's not New York City, so it's not like there's a different amazing sight to see every day. But each day brings a new adventure that can be had. In fact, you can also play golf. There's also actually a golf course, a nine-hole golf course on one side of the island. It's actually really nice. I didn't get a chance to play, but I did walk out on it and take a few pictures. It was beautiful. So there's actually a lot to do. You would be surprised. It's a place where you can keep yourself occupied for days, but even more importantly, you can just chill out. You can relax. You can go and have a bonfire on the beach, and no one's going to bother you. It's not the cheapest place in the world, but it's money well spent.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Since you've got a small number of travelers, I'm guessing that not so much a backpacker or budget traveler destination.
Well, it's definitely not a backpacker destination. Actually, the flights out there from Sydney, they average about $900 round trip. And
oh, wow.
Depending on the season, it could be anywhere up to about $1,500. Hmm. And it's on one of those small prop planes, and it's only a couple days a week. Now, accommodation is certainly not budget friendly. I mean, the cheapest place you'll find is about $200 a night. So, be that as it may, it's still an amazing place, and you generally get what you pay for. The cheapest place on the island is actually where I stayed, and it was beautiful. It was really nice. It was like a self-contained apartment. You could actually cook if you wanted to. I don't cook, so I didn't do that, but you could. Had a beautiful garden. It was right on the beach. And obviously, the more you want to spend, the higher scale you go up. And I believe the top place on the island was about $1,500 a night. And I'll be honest, I walked into it to have a cocktail and just to check it out to say I was in the $1,500 a night hotel. and it really wasn't that great. I mean, it was certainly nice, but it wasn't worth $1,300 more than the place that I stayed, I'd tell you that much. Although, I do know one guy who actually managed to get there. He paid for his ticket, but then he actually just kind of slept on the beach and nobody bugged him. So.
Now, the name of the place you stayed and the name of the expensive one?
The Lorhiti Resort is where I stayed for about $200 a night. It was a great place, and I really liked it, and the owners were great, and you could probably actually talk them down a little bit. On the contrary, the Argila Hotel is the one that went for $1,500 a night. I mean, it was a beautiful postmodern hotel, very nice, but again, anyone who thinks it's worth $1,500 a night to stay there, Dave should probably go see a doctor.
Well, I think they're probably just staying there to avoid the hoi polloi like me. So.
That's the thing about Lord Howe. They're trying to keep the riffraff out, but at the same time, they're keeping one of the best places in the world a secret.
What surprised you about Lord Howe Island?
What surprised me was kind of just what I described to you. I was expecting there not to be much to do because it's such a small island. I've been to a couple islands like that, islands such as Pitcairn Island, where there's a lot to do, and the island itself is so small. But Lord Howe was just so pristine. I mean, everything was perfect. It was almost like they had a golf course manicurist all over the island to take care of everything. Like every blade of grass was almost perfect. Every hill was like the perfect color. Every tree was perfectly manicured. It was really amazing. There was no trash on the street. It was almost like it was a law to wave hi to people. I mean, it was just the most pleasant place I've ever been. I mean, it really was.
Well, and you talk about waving hi to people. Did you get a chance to get to know any of the locals? And is there anyone who left a real impression on you?
Well, I got to know the owners of the Lorhiti Hotel pretty well because they actually ended up doing some laundry for us. And they were just really nice. They kept knocking on the door and seeing how we were doing and giving advice. They actually let us borrow their bikes to go around the island. It was really nice. Also, I ate at a restaurant called Humpty Mix. 3 times, actually, in the 4 or 5 days I was there. And it was just perfect. So we got to know the waiters and waitresses. And you had to go in there a bunch of times because you actually have to tell them earlier in the day that you're going to go back so they know how much food to buy or to catch in the sea. So it's pretty cool. And you really get to know people. And like I said, everybody's super nice. The lady at the post office, because I went in there because I wanted to get a passport stamp to commemorate my trip there. And then she's like, oh, we love tourists. And we went in there and we just started chatting for like 30 minutes. And then I saw her later at the restaurant. She bought me a beer. So, I mean, it was just great people, just really nice, just great people, people who are really enjoying their lives.
When you mentioned that you got some advice from the people who were the owners of the hotel where you stayed, is there advice that you got from them that isn't in the guidebooks? I mean, what is the local secret to Lord Howe Island?
Well, I'd say the best secret they gave me was basically which paths to take to get up to the best lookouts on the island and basically what time of day is best lighting for some pictures because I love to take pictures. I mean, who doesn't? Also, when there would be less tourists. I mean, it's almost an oxymoron to say less tourists when there's only 150 people on the island total and probably only 40 of them are tourists. But still, there's only so much to do. So a lot of people like to do the same things, especially if it's a nice day out. So they basically told us the best ways to get up there and avoid any type of tourist traffic, basically. I'd say that was probably their best advice.
And in terms of the best time, I'm guessing sunrise and sunset. But is there a trick that I'm not aware of?
Yeah, it was basically leave it about essentially 4 o'clock to get the sun at the perfect location. If you're going up to Kim's Lookout, which is the best lookout point on the island, you look out over everything and you can also see the cliffs on one side of the island. So that way you have the sun behind you. So it gives you some great pictures, but also gives you some great light with also some great shadows. So it's a perfect time of day. I have a great picture.
Anything else about Lord Howe before we move on to Norfolk Island?
Just that, like I said, it's just a beautiful island. There's a ton to do. And when you get there, your blood pressure just drops like 30 points. It's crazy because it's really just one of the most relaxed, chilled out places I've ever been. If you're going to pay to get out there, the cost to Australia and then the cost from Australia to Lord Howe Island, you better enjoy it and just takes the stress away. It's just a great place. It really is.
Okay. Norfolk Island. Big fan of the pine tree. spread by the British around the Pacific because they were tall and straight and useful for replacing their masts. That's all I know about Norfolk Island.
Norfolk Island is actually a really interesting place. It's very historic because it's one place where a lot of people from Pitcairn Island back in 1856 actually left the island because their population grew too high. So they took a boat and went to Norfolk Island and started a colony over there. Previous to that, it had been used as a penal colony by the British. And eventually they gave up on that and brought all the prisoners over to Port Arthur in Tasmania. So then it was just the Pitcairners who obviously brought a mix of British and Polynesian. So when you go there today, you see a mix of British, Australian people, but mixed with Polynesian because that's how they've been bred over the past 150 years. That aside, it's still part of the British Crown, I guess technically part of Australia now, although they're very self-governed. In fact, even Australians need a passport to go there. So it's an interesting place. They have a World Heritage Site, which is very similar to Port Arthur in Tasmania. It's a former penal colony, mm-hmm. and that's also where the Pitcairn Islanders lived when they were there. The whole island is 2 miles by 5 miles, but there's actually something like 200 miles of road or something crazy like that on the island. I think I drove just about all of it, and it's a beautiful place. It has a big airport. It was strategic during World War II for both Australia, New Zealand, and the Solomon Islands because a lot of battles were fought, as you know, in the Solomon Islands and Guadalcanal and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's just an interesting place to be. It's like one of those places, kind of like Alaska. Kind of people just end up there, and you go and you stay, and it's just kind of a weird feeling. A bunch of different type people, and you listen to their stories, and it's just really interesting. They have different types of stories than you'll have. They have problems that are a lot different than you'll have, and none of them pay taxes, and that's all they really seem to talk about.
So you say different types of stories, different types of problems. You mentioned the taxes. Are there other stories that they were telling you that are different?
The population on the island is only 2,300 people, and if you live on an island that's small and you're talking about the younger, more single people, you're talking about a lot of, say, cross-dating. So just listening to stories about how a guy dated his buddy's sister, who was one of only like three single girls under the age of like 30, listening to stories like that, and you're just like, okay, my head is spinning listening to it. And then the brother got pissed, and then they got in a fight, but then there's only so much to do. So it's just funny listening to the stories. I went to a bar there called the Leagues Club, which is pretty much the only bar to go to. It has some pool tables, and it's technically a sports bar, but all they really watch is rugby. And it was just really interesting talking to them. And I think they were probably more interested in talking to me than I was talking to them because they couldn't understand why a guy from New York City was on Norfolk Island. But to me, it was one of the more fascinating places I've seen.
Anything else in terms of Lord Howe versus Norfolk Island that distinguishes the two? Obviously, Norfolk Island is big crowds.
Yeah. Well, the big difference between Lord Howe and Norfolk is the island itself and the infrastructure, whereas like Lord Howe Islands has palm trees and is more tropical. Norfolk Island, as you mentioned, is very pine tree-y, if that's a word, and also has less money. So whereas okay. Lord Howe is rich people hanging out and rich tourists who go there, Lord Howe is where actually a lot of old people go on vacation, whereas the old people who live on the island will go to the mainland because of the lack of medical care. But a lot of Australian and New Zealand elderly, they'll do 2-week trips there. It's kind of crazy, but that's the big difference. And it's a lot more affordable on Norfolk Island than it is on Lord Howe.
And I'm guessing more temperate because of the difference in the foliage.
Absolutely more temperate, but they still have a beautiful golf course. They have really nice beaches. Just a nice place to be, nice place to drive around. They have this beach called Emily Bay, which is absolutely beautiful. And even Queen Elizabeth was there in the 70s, and she said she loved it. And I believe everything she says.
And then the third island you wanted to talk about is Christmas Island.
Yeah, Christmas Island is one of the coolest islands I've been to. Christmas Island is very different than any other island in Australia, and certainly any other island I've ever been to be honest. The main tourist draw to Christmas Island is the red crab migration. Now, let me say this. They claim that there's 120 million red crabs on Christmas Island. And let me tell you from experience, they're absolutely enormous, and they're the brightest red you've ever seen. It's almost like fire truck red. And gorgeous place, rugged landscape. And the people are there generally because they're working. They mine phosphate there. That's the big mineral and the big source of income. And in recent years, it's become a source of controversy because they built a detention center there to basically house people who are seeking asylum in Australia, mainly Indonesians and other poorer Southeast Asian countries trying to get to Australia to obtain citizenship. It's very similar to the Italian island of Lampedusa in the Mediterranean when you get the Africans taking boats there and trying to seek asylum. The difference is with Christmas Island, they close off about a third of the island for this detention center, and it's become a big political lightning rod in Australia. And in one of the recent elections, actually, there's a bunch of deaths caused after one of the boats was capsized because the Australian government wouldn't let them land on Christmas Island. So a bunch of people died and it became this whole political crossfire thing. But since then, they're trying to move the detention center. They're trying to convince different countries like Papua New Guinea and Nauru to take them, but to no avail so far. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But it's also a mix of cultures there. They have Chinese people, they have Malaysians, they have Singaporeans, and they've all come there to work over the years, and then they just kind of stay. The town is very small. There's three different settlements, essentially. But the main settlement where I stayed in the Captain's Last Resort, which is a great place to stay, by the way, and only about $80 a night, is right by the bar, which is like where everybody goes every night because there's at night there's only one thing to do, and that's drink beer. So that's what everybody does. And they tell stories of mining or of some stupid tourist or of those damn crabs that just get everywhere when you can't drive during the migration. It's really amazing. Aside from that, they have some of the nicest beaches in the world and also some great hikes. And it's a lot bigger island than you think it would be.
And you said the crabs are just really huge. I have pictures of sci-fi movie-sized giant crabs. How big is really huge?
There's actually two different types of crabs. I'll say they're still big, but I'll call them the little crabs. I'd say are about 6 to 8 inches wide.
Okay.
And probably about 5 or 6 inches tall, so to speak. And then they have these like amazing, I'll call them killer looking crabs. They look like what you'd see in like a Godzilla movie. It was pretty crazy. They're actually about almost a foot tall. And I mean a foot tall from the ground up. And then they have these, it's like the weirdest thing. You got to obviously take a look at my pictures. They're scary looking creatures. And when you get up close to them, you don't know whether you should get up close and take a picture or like run the other way. It's almost like they're going to raise their talons or their claws and just like destroy you. It's really wild. Yeah, it's literally like there's hundreds of thousands of them around you at any time. It's really wild. And like if you're like walking through the forest or through the jungle, I should say, trying to get to like one of the beaches, which can be like an hour hike, you're just like watching where you're going, trying not to walk into trees, but at the same time you're trying not to step on crabs because that's just like the worst sound in the world, number one. And then you're wearing flip-flops, so I also don't want to like one cut my foot or just get crab juice all over you. It's pretty wild. Not to mention there's tons of massive spiders there too, so when you're walking through, you got like a triple threat of trees, spiders, and crabs. It's pretty crazy.
Okay.
But trust me, when you get to those beaches, they're absolutely gorgeous.
Well, sure, they're protected by crabs, so they're not going to be really crowded, I'm guessing.
No, there's nobody on it. And take a look at the pictures. They're absolutely gorgeous, and they're absolutely touristless. And even the people who live there never go to them because all they really do is sit around and drink beer and complain about the government.
Okay. So I've got three different islands here. If I've got money to burn, I'm going to Lord Howe Island. Who's going to Christmas Island or who's going to Norfolk Island? What would you recommend? Which travelers should go there first?
Well, I think anybody interested in a real adventure and a different type of destination should go to Christmas Island. Okay. Christmas Island, like I said, is just one of the coolest places that you can go. It's to see the crabs, to see the landscape, and to see how the real kind of roughneck Aussies live and how they mix with like other cultures, how they mix with the other Asian cultures. It's a real interesting place to be, and it's a great place to spend 4 or 5 days. Norfolk Island is a beautiful island as well, but at the same time, it's there's not as much to do. It's more about driving around, hanging out in town, talking to the locals. It's a real laid-back atmosphere. Not that Christmas Island or Lord Howe is not laid-back, but it's laid-back in a different way, in a more older traveler kind of way, whereas Lord Howe Island is just as pristine as it gets. And if you got a couple $1,000 to blow, I promise you, you will not be disappointed in Lord Howe Island.
Excellent. All three islands, picture them in your head, if you will.
Yep.
You're standing in the prettiest spot of any of the three. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
That's a tough one. I got a tie between two. Kim's lookout on Lord Howe Island overlooked the entire World Heritage Site Island and Gower Peak on the other side of the island. It's a stunning view. It really is, especially if you do it around sunset, because like I said, then you have the perfect light and it's just, it's straight out of a brochure. It really is gorgeous. But then there's also Dolly Beach on Christmas Island, which when you get there after an hour walk through the jungle, like I said, dodging crabs and spiders. But when you get to that beach and there's not a person on it and there's just a couple crabs and there's just this beautiful water and you actually made it and it's this real sense of accomplishment and you realize that you're the only person around for a couple miles. It's a pretty cool feeling and the water itself is beautiful. And then when you turn around to see the beautiful white sand beach with all the crabs kind of dotting the beach, but at the same time, the beautiful foliage behind it, it's a real special place to be.
Now, I normally ask, do you recommend certain places to eat? We're talking about three different places that there aren't really that many options. But is there one thing, if I'm going to all three of the islands, one thing I should order?
On Lord Howe Island, there's a restaurant called Humpty Mix, as I mentioned earlier, and it's one of the few restaurants on the island. And to me, it's 100% the best restaurant on the island. And they have the best scallops I've ever had in my entire life. And I've eaten a lot of scallops, and I can say with absolute certainty they're the best I've ever had. So 100%, that would be my recommendation.
Okay. You read the guidebooks. They tell you what to do in the islands. One thing that they suggested that you think, just don't bother. It's not worth the time.
I would probably tell you that the World Heritage Site on Norfolk Island is probably not worth a whole lot of time going to. It was named the World Heritage Site just a couple of years ago, basically as a lot of World Heritage Sites are, just to kind of put places on the map because they're running out of places to put on that list each year. So they kind of add things that really shouldn't be on the list. And yeah, it was a penal colony, and actually the historical standpoint of it is more interesting than the actual site itself. So if you read the guidebook, like you said, and get the history and the background on it, that's a lot more interesting and maybe save yourself a trip to it. Or if you do go to actually see it, just be aware that it's not that wonderful a place to see.
Okay. One thing you should pack before you go to these islands, besides sunscreen.
Definitely sunscreen. I would probably tell you, if you're going to go hiking around Christmas Island, to not wear open-toed shoes. And I say that from experience, that stepping on crabs can really hurt the bottom of your feet. Believe me on that one. And also, if you're going to Lord Howe Island, bring some cash.
Okay. Any last tips before we close this off?
My main tip would probably be just go. Just don't even think about the cost. Go to Lord Howe Island. It's really amazing. And go to Christmas Island, because going to Christmas Island gives you a couple of really cool options too, because there's only one way to get to Christmas Island, and that's from Perth. The only other way is from an island called Cocos Keeling, which is also connected by Virgin Australia from Perth. And that's another cool island to go to that we could talk about another time. But Perth itself is an amazing city. And you can also obviously get from Perth up to Bali and Southeast Asia and some other places like that pretty easily. And not a lot of people get out to Perth. So I think that's kind of an added bonus of going out to Christmas Island.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really say that it's actually closer to Indonesia than to Australia by the time you're at Christmas Island.
That's very true. It was actually a part of Singapore until I think it was like 1957. The British basically took it away from Singapore and gave it to Australia. Australia had to pay them like $2.9 million to cover the lost revenue from the phosphate mines. Not a bad deal for Australia, considering how much money they get these days for it. And now Singapore is an independent state and is actually really pissed that the British did that right before they became independent themselves. So go figure.
The other thing I should say is, of all of the capital cities that I've run into, I thought the name of the capital city on Christmas Island was one of the coolest. Flying Fish Cove.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Flying Fish Cove is a pretty awesome place that actually refers to the landing point, but most of the towns on the island don't actually have names. So that's what the main part of town is called. And like you said, the capital city. Yeah, that's kind of cool. Just like on the BVIs, I always liked that they called Road Town the capital. Or in Anguilla, they call the capital the Valley. I always thought that was kind of neat.
Three last questions for you. Picture all three islands. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Lord Howe or only in Christmas Island.
Without a doubt, based on the three, and like I was telling you before, it's walking through the jungle in Christmas Island, dodging spiders, literally, like massive spiders in huge webs and these massive crabs. That, for me, is just a priceless memory. That, along with the fact that I actually crashed a moped I was riding because you're going through the jungle and you can't see all the mud and moss on the ground, but that's a different story for a different day. But yeah, definitely Christmas Island, the crabs and the spiders.
I'm not sure if the tourism board is going to love us for that. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Lord Howe Island or Christmas Island or Norfolk Island when what?
You really know you're in Lord Howe Island when you look around and everything around you looks like Disneyland. And I'm not saying rides or Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. I just mean pristine, clean, like no place you've ever seen. It's honestly, it's like paradise on earth. There's nothing to worry about there. Everything is perfect. And I say that not exaggerating.
And you've seen a few countries here, so we can take that with some authority here.
Yeah, I've seen a few countries, so I can say this with no exaggeration and I have no financial stake in it at all. It is truly paradise.
Cool. Last question. You normally give people three words to summarize one destination. You've got three destinations, so you get one word each to describe Lord Howe Island, one to describe Norfolk Island, and one to describe Christmas Island. Which word would you pick?
Lord Howe Island, perfect.
Okay.
Christmas Island, exotic.
Okay.
Norfolk Island, historic.
Excellent. Lee, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us some little piece of your travels. Where can people read more about your travels?
No problem, Chris. Thanks a lot for having me. And check out my website, leeabbamanti.com. I'll spell it for you to make it easier. It's leeabbamonte.com. And you can find me on Twitter at leeabbamanti or facebook.com/leeabbamanti is my fan page. And I'm pretty active on Facebook, so check it out.
Excellent. And thanks for coming on the Amateur Traveler.
Chris, I had a great time and love to do it again. And maybe we can do a larger destination next time.
We could hardly go smaller. So,
yeah, true story.
In news of the community, I continue to get response to the Southern New Zealand podcast we did. Corinne wrote and said, "Loved your Southern New Zealand podcast. My husband and I spent our 3-week honeymoon in New Zealand way back in the late 90s. Freewheeling, we toured both islands by motorcycle and zigzagged across the South Island. We overtook all those people who toured by camper van and thought we'd never use one. Our journey in the South started at Picton off the ferry, Kaikoura, Hamner, Hot Springs, Christchurch, Akaroa, a beautiful French colonized town twisted around Arthur's Pass, Queenstown, did an adrenaline shot over boat ride, Milford Sound overnight on the more restful boat, and up the west coast to Greymouth. Listening to Eric's holiday and your commentary, I long to go back and to visit our neighbor to the east. Living in Australia, I agree with your comments about the differences between Australia's dry and New Zealand's wet terrain. We toured New Zealand in January and still got a lot of rain. We were prepared and had contingency days. Anyway, now with the kids, them pesky camper vans look appealing. I must be getting old." Thanks so much, Corinne. I got an email from Simon who said, "Great show. My wife and I love your podcast and can't wait to listen to the next one. We especially like looking at the photos so you can imagine our disappointment when we couldn't find a way to see them on our Android tablet. I remember you talked about it a few episodes ago, but can't remember exactly what. Can you please explain if there's a way to see pics on the Android systems? On my small iPhone, I see them just fine." And Simon, I'm afraid I don't know of any way to see them on the Android operating system. I only know of ways through iTunes, and it works through iPhone and the other Apple products. But so far, there's no standard that's available that I can publish on Android, so far as I know. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. I could use your help. The Podcast Awards is going on. If the nominations are still open, you can go to podcastawards.com. If The Amateur Traveler did get nominated, you could vote for me there. Stitcher Smart Radio is also doing a contest. If you're using that application on your smartphone, give a thumbs up to Amateur Traveler, and it will help people find the show. Don't forget the community, facebook.com/amateur traveler, and you can follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.